Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first Celtic Blog Emergency Podcast, our Transfer Window Special. When he was a kid, someone asked Boris Johnson what he wanted to be when he grew up. He answered, World King. Now, I think that was a moronic answer, but it was one he never grew out of. Johnson rose to supreme power. He won an election in a landslide. But what power revealed about Johnson is that he wanted it for its own sake. He had no idea what he wanted to do with it. The same criticism was levelled at Gordon Brown, who plotted and schemed against Blair for years until he finally took control, and then over the course of a few short years he saw it all slip away. But for a brief time when he rallied the world against the banking crisis, he looked very much like a man who had lusted after the prize without really having a strategy for what he would do if he won it. Unlike Johnson, he was supposedly a man of ideas, but a man who revealed he didn't really have any. I've written at length here about the state our club is in, and it feels remarkable to write that in the aftermath of another double. And yet, I write it still. People who criticise me for this and think I should enjoy the good times without wallowing in gloom need to realise something. Success on the pitch is not, and it never has been, a measure of how strong a football club is. Does that sound ridiculous to you? Well, consider this. Rangers were champions the year before they went out of business completely. They matched us title for title for a decade, in which they were just one hard push from catastrophe. And when the 2011-12 season started, they were not just the holders. They had won three titles in a row. 12 months later, the new co was clawing its way up from Division 3. Money in the bank is not a measure of how strong a club is either. Manchester United have been in the top 5 richest clubs for decades. It's been more than 10 years since they won a domestic title, and last season they finished 8th in the EPL. On the day Alex Ferguson left, they were champions. They were rich. To the outside world, they looked in good condition, and they looked like they could continue to dominate in English football for years to come. But behind the scenes, the rot had already set in, the club was in decline, and Ferguson knew it. Decline is always visible. There are always signs. Rangers was in dire trouble even as their fans were rioting their way across Manchester in a European final. On the day Ferguson left United, David Gill left too, because they'd seen the direction of travel inside the club and knew it was not aligned with their own ideas. The signs of decline are clearly visible right now at Celtic. But you need to be willing to see them, and many fans, understandably, are not. That's part of the problem. They equate winning with strength. They equate financial stability with all being well. But the truth is that our club is going backwards in key areas, and it's been that way for years. On 25 September 2003, Peter Law was appointed at Celtic in the role of Executive Director and Head of Operations. Celtic actually went out of their way to make it clear that he would not have the job title Chief Executive, and the statement which accompanied that announcement spelled out the reason why those at the club at the time did not give that title to him. Basically, this is a recognition that football comes first and that everything else is there to support the football side of the business, a club spokesman said. Law was at this club in the same position for the next 18 years. And over that time, he made damn sure that he acquired the title Chief Executive. The idea that everything supports the football department is one that he's used as a deflection on several occasions since, but you only have to look at the rising profits and the times when the balance sheet definitely took more prominence than the team sheet to see how seriously he really takes that. It's been 14 years since we spent what was at the time a record sum of money on a player when we brought Chris Sutton for £6 million. We spent another £6 million on Lennon in the same time frame, and then we completed it with the signing of Harson for another £6 million. When we spent those same sums of money 2 years ago to secure Jota and Carter Vickers, we were told that this kind of big spending necessitated sacrifices elsewhere. And this is at a time when our earnings are much higher than they were when we brought in those three players for Martin O'Neill's team. We have never spent an eight-figure sum on a player. We supposedly came close. There was odds in Edward. But I remain suspicious of that reported transfer fees I did at the time. And I very much doubt that we ever paid £9 million for him. Although we did reportedly pay £7 million for Christopher Joyen. But the global transfer market and player values have multiplied massively in the time since we spent £18 million on those three players. And with this incredible escalation in player values, we rarely come up to the level of those signings, even now, even without taking into account inflation. In fact, Celtic has gone backwards in terms of what it's prepared to pay. Our average transfer fee over the course of the last dozen years is between £2 and £3 million. Football has gone one way and Celtic has gone the other. That's the reality and that is a choice. A choice we've made. There is nothing inevitable about this. This is a consequence of decisions we've taken in our boardroom, in our own house, over a long period of time. Decisions we remain locked into in spite of there being clear and obvious alternatives. We are therefore, by virtue of those choices, in a continued spiral of downsizing. And that all starts in one key area, with our level of ambition. People around keep reminding me this week about a Peter Law comment in the accounts at the end of last year about how we always need to have a surplus for years in which we don't qualify for the Champions League. Now this, as keen observers will know well, is utter rubbish. For one thing, even in the many, many years where we've not been a Champions League team, we have usually managed to post a profit. Yet even if this were true, even if we needed a heavy surplus, because in those non-Champions League years we do make a loss, think about what the implications of that statement actually are. We are not building to succeed. We're preparing for the consequences of failure. And that is a strategy utterly devoid of hope. At some point, the people in charge of Celtic looked at the changing landscape of European football and made the decision that we would not try to keep up. Think about that. Let it sink in. They decided. They didn't try. They didn't make the effort and then simply say, this isn't working out. We can keep pace with even the moderately strong clubs. Many of them with much less money than us. Many of them from countries not much bigger than this one. And we don't even try to do that. Outside of the big five, most of those teams are beatable regularly if we operate right. A smaller squad of more quality on higher salaries would certainly be capable of making such a challenge. Instead, they've gone the other way. As prices increased and wage cost spirals, they capped our salaries and reduced the fees we were willing to pay. And none of that was necessary. It's simply what we have chosen to do. Now, that does not mean that these are bad people. I've never believed that. I believe they have a certain arrogance and a certain selfishness. They must have. As it's that which prevents them from doing an honest-to-God evaluation of where we are as a club and where we should be. They've got egos. That's not an evil thing. I've got an ego. You've got an ego. To do this job, you have to have a certain amount of ego. So I sympathise. But it's a problem. And the reason it's a problem is that they don't know as much as they think they do. And especially when they look only at certain areas in which we're doing well without recognising that we're actually simply running along in front of the train and laying the tracks as we go. We're a reactive club. We are not a proactive club. And one slip and that train is going to run right over us. I can sum up for you where we are right now in two statements, both made by Peter Law, both following shocking January transfer windows where we failed to strengthen the team. This is the first statement. We had targets and moved for them, but for a variety of reasons it didn't happen. As can be the case in January, we found it to be a dead market, but we will work hard again to strengthen in the summer. We spent £7 million on players in the summer, and that's not a significant amount of money compared to clubs in the big European leagues. But we spend every penny that comes into the club. that's the way we will continue to operate. It isn't getting any easier for us to compete with the main European clubs. We have now refocused on ways of getting players to the club, and we need to create our own Champions League stars. Now, that was from January 2012. Rangers were on the brink of collapsing, but the bigger issue for us was that we had wanted an inspirational window where we didn't feel like we were risking watching them making it four in a row. And that was Peter Lawless' statement. That's what he told us to keep us on side after we had taken an almighty and unnecessary risk. This statement was from earlier this year. The board shares the frustration of the supporters regarding the less than anticipated activity in the recent transfer window. The board's commitment is to strengthen and improve the playing squad in every transfer window, and although resources were available, we were unable to further add to the squad due to the unavailability of identified targets. The January transfer window is notoriously difficult, as clubs are very reluctant to let their best players go at such a crucial time of the season. It is notable that transfer activity in England was the lowest it has been for over 10 years, excluding the impact of COVID-19. That man has been making the same excuses and talking the same rubbish and fooling those who want to be fooled for more than 10 years now. In the one January window, where someone called Lawless was not running the club's transfer policy, we signed three players who went straight into the first team squad, and they are still in the first team squad as I am making this podcast. Although, depending on where you hear this, Matt O'Reilly might no longer be. And even if Law is just a symptom of the bigger problem, I'll take that as long as people accept that we do have a problem here. And that problem is with the people at the top of our house. Not only are these non-football people, but most of them are not from entrepreneurial backgrounds. This is what I mean when I talk about those who thirst after power without an idea of what to do with it, as opposed to those who find themselves in a situation that they were never prepared for. But it is one of the risks of having people on the board for too long, something I talked about in the Biden piece the other day, where I pointed out that most companies change the composition of their boardrooms every 3 or 4 years. It is even rarer for a director to be on a board of directors for longer than 5 years. Bear in mind that Peter Lawless was the chief executive at Celtic for 18 years. They have boxed themselves and this club into a place we can't escape from whilst they're in charge, because they don't have the strategic outlook which would enable us to escape from it. They see nothing but limitations. They don't see the potential in growing in the direction of Europe instead of downsizing to the level of Scotland. And let me repeat, I cannot and I do not hold this against them. The fact of it, I cannot argue with it at all. I can be angry with them for megalomania and a simple refusal to change course, but essentially it is not their fault. They are limited thinkers. They never expected to be in office, I'm sure, for this long, and they certainly never anticipated the landscape in which they currently work. I just wish they would have the sense to realise this and move on. You must understand, though, that when a lot of these guys joined the board, you could buy an English international striker, as we did with Chris Sutton, for £6 million. Those days are gone. Instead of adapting to the changes, they freaked out. The collapse of Rangers gave them an excuse to downsize, they got scared, and they locked themselves into a cycle. They took a decision to bunker. It is not a crime. It was a mistake. But we're still living with that mistake. We make money. We win trophies. So what's not to like? But do not look to these people to solve our larger problems. We misfire in so many areas. We have a signing policy that depends on finding assets, not on strengthening the team. But what happens when we have windows like last summer? Well, none of the signings work out. Costs us trophies and titles and money. It costs us in Europe, which shatters the coefficient, which drags down the national one, and that will remove from next season the automatic Champions League place, and it will soon see Scotland's second team losing even the chance to qualify for the big tournament. And before long, the parachute into the Europa League groups will be gone as well. We need a complete separation between the football department and the rest of the club, with the football department run by a broad thinker from a continental background instead of Scotland's piss-poor and shallow talent pool. Not a friend of the man either, but someone with no link to Celtic, brought in with a wide-ranging remit to make huge changes in every department, and who controls a budget which nobody outside the football department can touch, and which he and the manager can allocate to strengthening at their own discretion. We have a dysfunctional scouting system which is tailored to aim low instead of finding the best players we can get. A good director of football would point it where it belongs and, if necessary, rebuild it from the ground up. We're ruled by a stinking defeatism on that front, which is summed up by we can't attract the kind of players the fans want, a situation which is made worse by this board's failure to articulate a vision or offer the kind of financial incentives which would make that easier to do. This basically comes down to them no longer being willing to ask that question to a certain type of player in the first place. We have a completely deadened youth academy system which does not work, which does not produce, and which therefore provides no assistance to the manager at all in terms of augmenting his team with academy players. The quality of our leadership there is abysmal. We aim low in terms of our coaching staff and the whole way we do things. Like a lot of failing regimes, our directors think you can solve this stuff by investing in the big project. But the keys to a better future do not lie in fancy buildings, but in a better quality of coaching staff, a more coherent system run by innovative people whose first task would be to upend everything we are teaching our kids right now. And even then, we risk that all of it would fail the minute we threw those players into the blood and thunder nonsense of the Lowland League, where they won't learn a damn thing. The failure to fight for a proper reserve league in Scotland is another massive strategic failure and another area where this board's position is untenable. A proper strategic review at Celtic would throw up even more problems and expose limited thinking in areas we can't even conceive of in a piece like this. And I repeat, for the third time, this is not their fault. The world changed and it did so in ways that were so rapid that they were left scratching their heads. At a time like that, what you need are people who can think outside the box, and we don't have them. And so we're stuck in the mud. And these people do not know how to chart a way forward or to pull us out of this mess. So we need to help this club to be better, we as fans. And sometimes that's going to require that we put it under pressure. People have been asking me all day, based on the piece earlier, how we're supposed to do that. All of them have asked me this through a variety of social media platforms, where they are just as connected to the people who run this club as they are to me. So if you're reading this and you want an answer to that question, don't ask me. Ask them. You can get in touch with them as easily as dropping me a message. So do it. Ask them what they intend to do. Ask them why this window has been such a non-event so far. Ask them about the areas of the club where you have the biggest concerns. And then ask them what the plan is. And I can tell you the answer to that right now. They don't have one. They've been in the job too long. They're too old, too set in their ways, too conservative in their thinking. I once called Peter Law the Wizard of Oz. All superficial bluff and bullshit. And underneath it, behind the curtain, a tired old man pulling at the controls, scrambling to look big. But in fact, that's our whole club. Successful on the surface till you scan the surface and you'll spot the wormhole. And when you cut it open, it's enough to stop your appetite dead. We aren't going to fix this stuff until we get started facing up to it. But ultimately, we're not going to fix it anyway until there are big changes at the very top of the Celtic house. Gents, ladies, I'll talk to you again soon.